Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Eliza Eliazarov. I did pretty good, right?
Close. Eliazarov.
And I was going to call you Eliza at the beginning just to ruffle you a little bit, but now that you know her real name, is a wonderful photographer whose recent exhibition, Waste Not, up in Beacon, New York at Fovea, am I saying that right?
Fovea.
Explores this fascinating world of food, not unseen but overlooked. It's more about food rescue than it is about food waste, because what you're making right now are these excellent tableaus that kind of show not how wasteful our society, but how forgotten some of these, you know, kind of detrimental of food, you know, where it goes and what happens to it. So we're going to get to that in a second, but we're going to talk about all your craziness before. going to college, you studied environmental engineering. And first of all, I want to know what the heck that is.
Like natural resource management and engineering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a heck of a summary. But, I mean, you had this interest in preservation, conservation.
Exactly.
Something that didn't actually, did correlate to that, but was bigger than what you were studying. Mm-hmm. What were those first senses of, you know, I want to work in this field, maybe of food, but definitely I want to, you know, tattoo sustainability across my arm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big question. Okay. Well, I think that initially I was really interested in preservation and conservation issues. But I was always really interested in ag economics. My ag economic classes in undergrad were always really interesting to me, and soil science classes and things like that. So even though after university I went and worked in preservation and conservation in national parks, I was always really interested in land use and land use issues. And as the years went on and my interests grew in different directions and different things kind of happened in the world and were brought to my attention and became interests of mine, it kind of shifted to this place of farming and sustainability.
No, it's a fascinating thing because, I mean, who would have known when you were cooking in, like, Glacier National Park that, you know, that was going to be something that you cared about so much, aside from just maybe the rote cooking aspect of it, that food management or, you know, what we do with food as an input and output was so important to, you know, how you thought about society as a whole.
Right. But obviously, you know, food, the production of food and the farming of food is closely connected with conservation and preservation, with land use, water use, the effect that farming has on the environment, ranching.
Yeah.
The contribution of large farming operations.
Well, I mean, I think another one of the places where you were a park ranger like Mead is kind of like a very interesting aspect of that. You know, it's a dam. Or Hoover Dam is right there.
That's right.
And then it is literally a desert, not just a food desert.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that is because of, well, can you call it water conservation? So you don't want to get political on me. But I think it's a fascinating thing that you worked on these national plots of land. And they are preservations in itself. But that you came to an urban place in L.A. initially and saw, you know, the other side of it. You know, you didn't see those fertile, you know, forests. You didn't see the farmers getting you know, the land that they grew up on. You saw all that thing being deprived and being taken away. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's talk about South Central Farmers Market in LA and, you know, that instance where you saw, you know, that first burgeoning interest in trying to help people get their land back.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was living in LA in 2007 and the South Central farmers were in danger of losing their farmland in downtown LA, and the community joined together, including celebrities. Joan Baez was sitting in a tree, and, you know, all of these other people joined forces to really try to get that land that was going to be, I think, converted into a parking lot or something, saved. And there was so much, there was a lot of talk around that in LA. It was exciting. It was exciting and to see what was going to happen. Eventually, the worst happened.
Yeah. You know,
the farmland was taken away. But it was an interesting time that I think really brought attention to food justice issues and the rights people have to grow their own food.
Yeah, I mean, you were a teacher at the time, and, you know, you and your students had a garden. Was that just a, you know, a fun agrarian project, or was there a moral in that?
I was teaching third grade. It was both. It was a fun agrarian project, but it was also, I connected a lot of what I was doing with farming to sustainability at that time also, and with global warming. And we made a short film for the NRDC, and we did a lot of other work where we integrated science and growing and agriculture into current affairs and what was happening in the community.
Yeah. I mean, there was a huge current affair happening at that time with, you know, Evo Morales and, you know, Bolivia's first indigenous president. Mm-hmm. What was it that made you have to go down there and see that for yourself? Because you're talking about, you know, agrarian reform from initially, you know, a classroom to a city scale, and now we're talking about a national scale.
Right. I just found what Evo Morales was doing to be so inspiring and positive and so exciting. Not often do we hear of leaders of state giving land back in a real way to agrarian people or indigenous people. Oftentimes we hear about the land being taken away. And as a photographer, I think, and a documentarian, I've always been really interested in focusing on the positive aspects of complicated issues. So I found what was happening in Bolivia to be really inspiring and interesting and positive. So that's why I went.
Yeah. I mean, so this was a documentary project. As a photographer, where you spent, 3 months down there, mm-hmm. Who did you meet and how did they inspire you, aside from just the imagery you made?
Mm-hmm. Well, I met so many inspiring, amazing people. A lot of it was really interesting. It was my first time immersed in an expat journalist community. So I lived with the AP writer in Bolivia, and I worked with a New York Times contributor to help him, and there's all this whole community of people that was down there and that were down there and living down there, and had some of them had been down there for years and years working on different issues. But I worked with one organization called Fundación Tierra that was an NGO working in the Altiplano in Bolivia to help the indigenous people in the Altiplano establish land boundaries and get them recorded, because they were nomadic, illiterate, oftentimes, people, and their culture of the Aymara and Quechua people down there, it was just word of mouth. Like, you walk to one ridge and somebody says, this is where my land ends, and then you'd walk distance in another direction, and that was the ridge where the other part of the boundary was of the land. So it was nothing ever written down. So the country still lacked the infrastructure or any kind of real documentation of who owned what land. So working with these indigenous people who you know, own this land by word only, and make it real, so they really had rights to that land when it came time for yeah. it, was important and critical.
Yeah, it's. I asked this question of whether or not you're a subjective or objective photographer, like whether or not all this passion that you speak about, on this certain subject, are you actively helping these people, or are you just there to observe and report? It's a hard thing. Being, a documentary photographer myself, I feel like I stepped away from that aspect of photojournalism. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad to have kind of disconnected myself from it.
I think the best way I would describe myself is a concerned photographer, and living in that space of concerned photography.
Yeah. I mean, you did your internships at what time?
Life Picture Collections. Yeah.
The Edie Adams workshop. And these are places where, there's a conscious behind the lens. Mm-hmm. You're not just taking a pretty photo. You're trying to send a message, emit something, evoke something, through that imagery.
Absolutely.
What images have done that for you in the past?
Oh, that's a big question.
Because I can tell you a couple that actually did it for
Please,
me.
Please, tell me.
When I was working at Edible Magazine, I got this portfolio in of backyard chickens. And, it was funny working for a food magazine. So often I'd be sent portfolios of, food on the table, what they ate for lunch, mm-hmm. maybe a portrait of a chef with their arms folded wearing their whites. And I can see merit, and I could see quality within those. But when I saw something that was both abstract as a still life, but also as a concept, I knew there was something deeper about your imagery.
Thank you.
So, we're going to talk about chickens in a second, but one, they were beautiful images of people's, backyard poultry in and around, Brooklyn?
Around the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you yourself have chickens at the time?
No.
Do you have chickens now?
No.
But what is this?
I beg. It's an ongoing battle with my landlord.
Yeah.
I ask her every few months
you could
if
have
I
mine,
can
actually.
Have them. Do you have some?
But we'll talk about that off air.
Oh, my gosh.
But this connection with that community was in direct response to something bigger. What was the kind of political climate that you think made people look towards this backyard chicken raising movement?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that partly after the economic, I think a lot of things kind of collided at the same time and at the right time for this to all happen, for the new sustainable farming movement to take place and take off. And I think it was kind of this collision of the economy collapsing in 2008, the blogosphere blowing up and social media blowing up, this DIY kind of movement, and then the access to information that became available, where people were learning that cage-free eggs just might doesn't really mean anything. And there was very little regulation around what it means to have free range eggs. Maybe it's still 10,000 chickens in a hen house with a window or something like that. And I think people, because they had access to this information and then be able to see somebody's blog post that talked about how they started their chicken coop, that it really created this community of skill sharing and possibility that you can do it. Because it is like this whole skill sharing DIY kind of culture that we live in now, and that the availability of information and the openness and collaboration that exists between people on social media platforms is so inviting and so accessible. And also coming into that is playing into that is like meetup.com, which I join meetup.com groups, chicken enthusiast meetup.com groups across the country to find my chicken enthusiasts that started this project. So, and that's what a great platform. People, you're excited about, you're interested in raising chickens and getting chickens, or you have chickens and you want a community of other folks that are like-minded, and you join this group and you get together and you help each other build coops and you share, you skill share and you share information and you help problem solve around predators or parasites or whatever is affecting your chickens at the time, or broodiness or whatever it is. And there's this great community out there who is just so enthusiastic and willing to help. So you, no matter where you are in this country, that you have today in this sharing culture, you have access to this skill sharing and this information, which is such a beautiful, it's such a beautiful thing. And I really think that it has played a huge role in catapulting the sustainability movement and young farmers to feel empowered to start farming,
yeah,
and taking control of their food.
Well, and most importantly, I believe it's asked the question. Well, it's begged the question to reconsider the chicken. When is a chicken poultry?
Right.
But we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk a little more about backyard chickens and, of course, Waste Not, your amazing exhibition of gleaned and foraged for food. You've been listening to Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
And welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here again with Eliza
Azarov.
You know, I phonetically write them out, I'm like, and then I look at these letters, and like, I don't know what this combination. It was so much easier to see your last name as is and repeat it in head than like try to parse it out. But I'm over that, and we're on to Waste Not, this exhibition which you've created. You went on assignment, you hung out with a freegan, and you went dumpster diving.
Right.
Was it as simple as that? Was that what inspired you to open up this world, not only of, you know, finding use for lost food, but also learning about the society of gleaners?
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of did start as simply as that. It I got this food assignment, this shooting assignment to photograph this gleaner, this freegan. And I met him on 116th Street and Broadway. And he went, I photographed him and was shooting him very documentary style as he was dumpster diving for food. And what I noticed, so another thing that sometimes freegans do is, especially in New York where there's pedestrian traffic, there's kind of an educational component to what sometimes freegans will do, where they will like kind of spread out some of the food that they've found in the garbage so passersby can see and engage in conversation and they can talk to them. So that happened. And not only was it, so we went diving outside of a market right after it closed. They brought out the trash to the curb and they started going through it and I was photographing and they started putting it out on the street. And it was just, not only was it fascinating to see the quality of the food that was being thrown out, but the engagement, there was almost a performative element in the way pedestrians were engaging with the freegans around the food. There were a lot of questions, a lot of confusion, a lot of people just stopping and being curious. It's the Columbia campus around that area. There's just a really diverse community of pedestrians walking by, asking questions about why is that food in the trash? What is that? What are you guys doing? And I was there photographing it, so I was bringing even more attention to what was happening. And then they were invited to take anything they wanted. And so it was interesting to see that interaction, see who said, hey, great, I'll take that apple, I'll take that baguette, that looks great. Or people who said, oh, that's horrible, but that food was thrown away, but no, I don't want it because it's in the garbage. And it just really, this interaction stayed with me, the conversation stayed with me, and I knew that I wanted to make work around it. And so what I did was I actually went back with that guy who was my subject for the shoot, the freegan, and I tried to recreate some kind of we went dumpster diving again, and I even like brought a tablecloth, like a little black velvet thing to put on the sidewalk and photograph it in the scene at on location, which was my inclination as a documentary photographer, was to photograph this on location. And it failed. Like it failed because, you know, you have to go dumpster diving at night after the store has brought the garbage out, which usually occurs at a grocery store around 9 or 10 or 11 at night. And it's on the dirty sidewalk of New York and the lighting is really bad and it still looked kind of yucky. So I started thinking, it really made me think about it. And I was, my main goal was to show the beauty in this food and how can I do that? So I started researching the food in art. And I started looking at paintings of, especially from the Dutch masters, like the 17th century food and art, still life food paintings, where this food was elevated into art. And I was like, that's it. That's what I need to do. I have to take food that was destined for trash and make it into something that looks like art.
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting about that is, you know, those Flemish painters, you know, and they were taking something that was so copious, you know, such like crazy expenditure. And I almost feel like those alcove paintings are bragging, whereas you're showing the humility in people passing up an opportunity to eat what is still really, you know, I mean, it's aside from sustenance, it's really good food.
Right.
Sell-by dates is a whole nother discussion we could have another day. Mm-hmm. But the light that you were putting what people thought of as garbage, you know, is that's what's most striking to me. Mm-hmm. You know, because you made these beautiful tableaus, like beautiful tableaus, where if you didn't tell someone that you had taken out of the garbage, would they have known?
No, they wouldn't. So that actually is an example of how the caption, almost the written word, complements the photo. So there's kind of, and I kind of like that. There's, I like when there's a little element of surprise or something in a photo, a discovery that happens with the viewer when they look at the photo and it looks like one thing, and then maybe they read and they read that all this food was found in the curbside trash, and they're like, oh, that's really interesting to me, and it's kind of funny and entertaining to me to elicit that kind of a response in viewers of my work.
Yeah. And but it's also juxtaposed with people that are gleaning.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of think of dumpster diving as urban gleaning. Because mm-hmm. you are taking something from the land that otherwise would go to waste.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, as the project grew, it... So I started with these still life tableaus that I would create in a studio in my home that I would build and around... and use these paintings as reference to recreate, to create these tableaus. And then as the project grew, I felt compelled to add to the story and tell the bigger story of food waste and food rescue across the country and what it looks like. So it expanded to not only be freegan food rescue, but it grew to cover food rescue organizations like like a City Harvest, and that food isn't rescued from the trash, but it's rescued and diverted by a connection with distributors and farmers with those organizations. And then I photographed the food at Wasted at Dan Barber's pop-up, which really highlights food waste and what is discarded in restaurants or other aspects of food, you know, the food system. And then I also worked with Gleaners and like the Connecticut Food Bank and Food Forward in LA to photograph gleaning, people harvesting fruit from fruit trees that in orchards or backyard, just a backyard fruit tree that would have otherwise gone to waste. So I really tried, and composting as well, which is a huge aspect of food rescue and diverting food from the landfill, which is really the goal, especially it's part of the goal is to divert the food from the landfill. The other is to not waste. And then also this brings up the question or the issues of hunger issues. You know, people,
we need like five more shows for all this stuff. I because we're running out of time, I do definitely want to, you know, reiterate that your exhibition at Fovea up in Beacon, New York is, you know, up until July 3rd, mm-hmm. that everyone should go and read the captions.
Yes.
Aside from seeing the photos. But that you're teaching a farm-to-table photography class at ICP this fall.
That's right.
At the International Center of Photography.
Yes.
And all those photographers interested in food photography, first of all, stop calling it food photography and realize that there can be that much more with policy and social justice and, you know, just a consciousness that, you know, goes into image making aside from just making a beautiful photo. And I definitely think your course will explore all those avenues.
I hope so.
And that everyone should check that out. And of course, some of the most recent covers of Modern Farmer. I mean, how you make those draft horses and alpaca, you know, smile. It's a beautiful thing, but that's for another time. Everyone go see Waste Not. And Aliza, thank you so much for being
thank
on.
Thank you.
Excellent. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. And a big thanks to Whole Foods Market for sponsoring. Music by Cookies and David Engineering. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.